Welcome to PX Pulse Live, AVAC's program covering critical issues facing HIV prevention research. I'm Jean Barron. On February 10th, AVAC and the Journalism Development Network came forward with Public Citizen to sue the new U.S. presidential administration seeking emergency relief from the freeze on foreign assistance. We know the impacts of that freeze have been devastating. AVAC's lawsuit is one of several efforts to fight back in the courts. Here to help us understand those lawsuits and why they matter are AVAC's Executive Director, Mitchell Warren, and Public Citizen Litigator, Lauren Bateman. Welcome to you both.
Thanks so much.
Can you both describe what's unfolded these past 2 months and where the lawsuit fits in?
Yeah, I can start with that. Since January 20th, we've seen an unprecedented effort to unlawfully dismantle crucial federal government programs. It's happened at the Department of Education with the Civil Rights Office there. It's happened at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's happened at the NIH. And here, it happened to foreign assistance programs at the State Department and USAID. So this lawsuit is part of a broader effort to push back against that dismantlement. And we argue that the executive has no authority to refuse to spend funds appropriated by Congress and no authority to issue those mass terminations of grants and cooperative agreements that we've seen.
But I would just say, and I think to Lauren's point, that our lawsuit, along with one filed on behalf of the Global Health Council and other partners, focuses on one aspect. And when you really look at foreign assistance, what we saw was the mass termination of staff, and that took on different lawsuits. It was about the freeze of foreign assistance. And fundamentally, it was about the complete lack of vision, strategy, transparency, and legality in making decisions which are within the president's realm to think about foreign policy in any administration's new way. But they don't have the ability to do things illegally, which is what all of these cases really ladder up to.
And what was at stake for AVAC? Why did you decide for AVAC to step into this role?
So AVAC plays a somewhat unique role in this regard. On the one hand, for 30 years, AVAC has been, continues to be a leading advocacy organization focused on HIV prevention and on global health research development and impact. So we look at this as an outside agency to say the dismantlement of foreign assistance has detrimental effect on global health and frankly on U.S. Political diplomacy. But on the other hand, we are also a recipient of USAID support. We have just finished 8 years of a 10-year cooperative agreement to build the coalition to accelerate and support prevention research, one very small part of the larger USAID ecosystem. And so as a grant recipient, we wanted and took advantage of the opportunity of being a grantee to say, this is illegal, this is wrong, and frankly, this is dumb in both global health, public health terms, as well as in US diplomatic terms.
Do we have an immediate goal for AVAC and a long-term goal?
The immediate goal and the long-term goal are actually one and the same, and that is to restart life-saving foreign assistance. This is not about any one project. It's not about AVAC. We are the lead plaintiff in this particular case, not only because we want our work to restart, but in the short term and in the long term, we want foreign assistance to play its rightful place in the armamentarium of U.S. diplomacy. And that is both about improving the lives around the world, but it actually is about improving the safety, security, and prosperity of the United States. That's what foreign assistance has always been about.
Got it. So, Lauren, from your point of view, what role has this case played on the national stage?
Yeah, the AVAC case has really been something of a bellwether in a number of different ways. It was one of the very first cases involving the administration's unprecedented claims of executive power to reach the Supreme Court. What happened there was that the district court had issued a temporary restraining order on February 13th that enjoined the defendants from enforcement of suspensions and terminations of grants and cooperative agreements. And the government essentially ignored that order. So we went back to the court multiple times seeking enforcement. And ultimately, the court issued an order directing the government to take a first step toward compliance with the temporary restraining order. And that first step was to pay for work that had already been completed on grants, contracts, and cooperative agreements before February 13th. The government went to the Supreme Court, I suppose, assuming it would have a friendlier forum there. And ultimately, the administration lost. It was a 5-4 decision that, like most cases decided on the emergency docket, didn't contain much reasoning, but it's, stands for the proposition that the district court has the power to enforce its own orders that it issues. So it was crucially important in that regard, as not only for the case at hand, but also as a sort of general signal that the government's intransigence won't be tolerated by the Supreme Court. And the other big role this case plays in the sort of national stage is that it's among the first cases litigating the increasingly important issue of the government's power to issue mass terminations of grants. And we've seen the administration employ this strategy across a host of agencies, and we're proud to be in the fight to establish that these sort of careless, reasonless mass terminations are illegal.
So not everything in the case has been resolved. It's still ongoing. What's next?
Well, the district court issued a preliminary injunction, and the basis for that injunction is that it's unconstitutional for the administration to decline to spend funds appropriated by Congress. So that's a really important holding. So take PEPFAR, for example. The sums of money allocated by Congress for PEPFAR are largely not being spent. So then the question remains, what does the government have to do to get in compliance with that preliminary injunction? And we haven't seen any evidence whatsoever so far that they intend to spend the money appropriated by Congress. So, and to the contrary, the administration has been touting what it's been doing as saving taxpayer dollars. So that seems highly incompatible with the idea that they're actually planning to spend the money, to say the least. So next steps are to continue to try to hold the government to the preliminary injunction. And also we're going to continue to fight the mass terminations of grants, contracts, and cooperative agreements. We saw that 83% of them were canceled. Many of them involve life-saving assistance, and we think it's really important to continue fighting that fight.
Gotcha. So as people process what these rulings have meant up to now and what still hangs in the balance, Mitchell, can you sort of sum up what you think we've won, where we have maybe not had the kind of win we wanted, and what still hangs in the balance with what the court's going to continue to weigh?
So first and foremost, I think as Lauren described, the initial orders have forced the government to pay its bills, at least through February 13th. And that is no small feat. Since January 27th, when projects all over the world were ground to a halt, even when they were told they could restart, there was no money to be had to do the work. So the fact that now projects all over the world are getting paid, although very slowly relative to what should be happening, is a good step. And so we're proud of that fact. But that only is for work previously done and through the February 13th deadline. What wasn't won, and at least has not been won yet, is the restart of these life-saving programs. And we believe that the court orders do move well beyond simply paying past bills, but actually, again, using the funds that have been appropriated. And I think one of the most important points that, and again, I leave the lawyering to Lauren and colleagues at Public Citizen, but one of the critical points in all of this was making it clear that the United States Congress is an equal and separate branch of government. And it has a role and a responsibility that, frankly, has either been abdicated or usurped by the administration. Being in the courtroom for the hearing was quite a legal education. And the judge himself even said, I have the Constitution here with me, making it very clear that Congress appropriates and the administration executes. And that is not what has happened in the last 2 months. So we have not won in the sense of restarting that equal balance of power, the joint decision making between Congress and the White House and the agencies under the executive branch. We will still fight for that, not only through this legal case, but through all of our work as advocates, and not just AVAC, because this is not just about foreign assistance. As Lauren rightly says, this is happening in every department in government. And so this issue of really encouraging, forcing, cajoling Congress to be very clear what they believe, what they've appropriated. There are members of Congress on both sides of the aisle that have been strong supporters of foreign assistance, not just of PEPFAR. Clearly, something changed on January 20th, and we need to change that back. We believe this legal case is part of that, but it won't do it all by itself. But it certainly provides the basis for strong advocacy. You know, we always say at AVAC that the best advocacy is grounded in evidence, whether that's the evidence of scientific research or the evidence of legal cases. We have both in our favor, that foreign assistance is good health, good development, and good diplomacy. And now it will help us do, I hope, better advocacy as a global community.
So for people who really care about the HIV response, people who care about science, advocates, governors, governments, civil society, and especially donors, how can they help support the work?
It's to remember that what has happened over the last 8 months is not what should ever happen, and it can't continue to happen. So it is to, in the classic experience of ACT UP that began the HIV movement 44 years ago, ACT UP and fight back. And that can be in any number of ways. Certainly legal cases are part of that fighting back. It is to show evidence and accountability. I think documenting what the impacts are of these draconian and illegal acts, I think, is part of it. But it's also to recognize that no one donor and no collection of donors can fully fill the gap of the U.S. government. So a lot of our work has to be in identifying what is mission critical for global health and global development and HIV, and how do we make sure that those critical pieces are not lost. We will not get back to the way things once were. It's thinking about a whole new architecture, a more resilient architecture for global health and development. And we need to be building that even as we deal with the day-to-day crises of the last 8 weeks. And I often say that we've spent a lot of the last 8 weeks filling the holes of the dike. The holes have come fast and furiously. And as Lauren said, across every possible aspect of civil society and governance, we have to fill the critical holes. But I believe that dike is not going to stand very long. We have to go upstream and build an entirely new dike, and one that can maintain the kind of life-saving work and impact, again, not just in global health, but in the relationships between the United States government, and the United States citizenry with citizens around the world, because that's what USAID has been about, a partnership. This is not charity. This is an investment. So we need a whole new investment strategy, and we need to make sure that donors are there to fund the critical activities in advocacy, in service delivery, in research, in good governance, and in accountability mechanisms, because it's clear that accountability of all stakeholders is one of the most critical aspects of democracy as it's been and as it must continue to be.
Imperative next steps, absolutely. Thank you both for your valuable work. You've been listening to PX Pulse Live. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.